Hello, welcome to the ACH podcast. I'm Sheepdog, and at the moment we're talking about autistic careers, and with me this episode is Mooney. Tell us a bit about yourself, Mooney.
Hi everyone, my name is Micaela, so I go by Mooney online. I'm an artist from Buenos Aires, Argentina, and I'm currently studying graphic design in college.
Very cool. So you're at college doing graphic design and you're an artist. You also work in quite a number of different areas, do you not? I believe from a previous conversation, you've got a lot of different things that you do. How did you begin? How did you get into your career? What's your background on that?
Right. So I've been drawing since I could hold a pencil, right? And I started taking things more seriously when I turned 18, and it was like, okay, I'm finishing high school. I need to do something with my life, right? And I was lucky enough to do an internship on my senior year of high school, and that studio ended up calling me back for some freelance projects once I graduated. And I mainly did pre-production stuff, such as storyboards and character design.
That sounds great, though. Isn't that? So storyboarding for, would that be books and things like that, or is it more about,
Right, so the storyboarding is more like the initial steps for a music video. Well, two actually.
Oh, wow.
I don't think you know the artist because it's more of like a Latin America section of Disney Junior. But basically, I did something freelance for them through the studio. I did what would be the foundations of the music video, and then the studio would, polish what I drew.
That sounds incredible. That's the kind of thing that people would obviously, if you're young and watching Disney, as you say, and you see a video on there and you think, this video is great, I wish I could make a video like this. You've gone and become the person who designed that on paper before they went and filmed it. I've understood that right, haven't I? That sounds like a great sort of role to go into.
It was a great opportunity, especially because the character that I was drawing for is a character I used to watch on TV when I was young.
Ah, very cool again.
Since it was for like Disney Junior, so it was for kids. I was like, oh my God, I'm doing something for someone I used to admire, Even though I don't think they know I exist, but it's just that the count.
No, that's great. I mean, now that you've ticked a box there, you've worked with a childhood hero or childhood thing that you've been a big fan of. And it's like, no, that's great. That sounds so, again, that's straight off the bat. You've basically gone from, being at university and learning the craft to getting an opportunity like that. Was that?
Oh, no, I was fresh out of high school.
High school, even better. So
I was 18.
Crikey. So your early career, your experience in your early career has been quite successful off the bat with opportunities. Would you say that it's your experience has been like that throughout, or has it kind of been up and down? How would you describe it?
I mean, I was freshly out of high school, right? So it was really scary being trusted with work because I didn't have any sort of experience on my back. But it also gave me the confidence to know I'm capable of fulfilling the task I was given, I was like, okay, but they trust me to do this and I can do it. So I will just try and do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess that's the sort of thing, I guess, isn't it? Of when you get given a new job, a new task to do by anyone, really, you think, wait, you want me to be responsible for this? And once you realize you can and they trust you, that is a great feeling.
Right. Yeah, it's also like fake it till you make it.
So were you aware at the time when you were that age, were you aware that you were autistic? Was it something that was on your agenda, on your radar that you had to think about, or did that come later on?
I mean, it's funny because I always knew I was different in some way. I was never to put a label on it because I didn't know. I always suspected I had anxiety, and I initially wanted to get diagnosed for it. And then my psychiatrist was like, nope, you're autistic. Well, you do have anxiety, but it was because you didn't have resources as an autistic person. And I wasn't aware of autism. Like, I wasn't diagnosed with autism during my first job. I actually got diagnosed during the pandemic when I was 19, so like a year later, when I was actually in college.
Okay, interesting. So you sort of started off not knowing and being given all these responsibilities and trying to work your way through it and obviously thinking you're getting anxious and having little bits and pieces there. And do you think then do you think it impacted choices you made and opportunities you had? But obviously you got quite good opportunities out of high school. You just obviously felt that you were struggling a bit with anxiety and whatnot. But do you think it had any impact before you found out about it? Or do you think just knowing about it has helped since?
Right. So being able to identify what's going on with me and also know it's not a problem or something I have to solve. It's just who I am. That has helped me. I'd say more like, personally, more like, regarding work. But like, I also haven't had too many jobs yet, and mostly due to the pandemic, most of them were remote, which was quite convenient for my anxiety from time to time, you know. So I also haven't had many different workspaces to compare, but so far so good, honestly.
That sounds positive. I guess, yeah, I've had a similar experience in life where the pandemic, everyone was worried about working from home, but what it actually did was give me the platform to deal with a lot of my anxieties about being at work. And so I guess for you, doing that first initial jobs and then being told you've got to do the rest of them from the comfort of your house, and we'll all understand and we'll all work with you, and if you've ever got any problems, they can kind of say pandemic, and it kind of gives you a bit of a leeway. That must have helped you build on top of that and get on top of it a bit and feel a bit more.
Oh yeah, it helped load.
Excellent. So you're saying about working on Disney and Disney Junior, is this something that you saw yourself doing when you were a child? Is it something where you thought, one day I'm going to work on shows like this? Or did you have a different ambition when you were younger?
I mean, I've always wanted to. It's funny because when I was a kid, I always knew what I wanted. I just didn't know it was a thing. I always give the example that I always knew someone designed Woody from Toy Story, and I knew I wanted to do that, but I didn't know it was actually a position in the studio, right? I just knew someone did it, so someone had to be doing that with other characters.
Yeah, that makes sense. A lot of those jobs seem so amazing.
Right, I never expected to be able to do something for Disney Junior, even if it was actually outsourced. So like, Disney Junior doesn't know who I am. They know the studio that contacted me, so it was kind of a third party thing. But I always also like wanted to illustrate books, and that's something I'm doing in my actual job right now, which is not a publisher, but it's a project that we've been commissioned to do. And I always wanted to do that as well, so I'm pretty happy with what I'm doing right now.
Excellent. So yeah, I was gonna say, like, you know, you've thought about, you wanted that job. It looks like an excellent job from the outside to be able to design a character like Woody. And I think it's fair to say a lot of people assume that someone who does that for a living probably does 50 other things at the same time. And actually at that level, they are the sort of person who has to sit and spend their entire time on that one.
Oh yeah. The industry is quite chaotic actually. So you will see character designing props, or maybe doing storyboards, or storyboard artists doing other things.
So with your career, obviously you've thought about what you want to do when you're older and you wanted to work on these sorts of projects. What's the sort of thing that's motivating you to keep going? What are you looking to keep you going to pursue your career and get higher in? Is there specific things that are kind of in you that you want to push for?
That's an interesting question. Probably the fact that with each project, not only I gain experience, but also draftsmanship due to the variety of tasks that I have to do between projects, such as editorial illustration, concept art, and such.
Cool. So you're gaining a lot of new skills that you can, yeah, build up towards that point, I guess, where when they are looking for you said that Disney don't know who you are at the moment, but if you got to a point where you can do all of these tasks and you're saying to them, hey, Disney, I once designed this for you out of college and you used it, so why not give me a job on Toy Story 7? You know, it could be option, couldn't it, where down the line you've got that portfolio built.
I mean, it's always good to have a niche.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the target, is it? People always say aim for a niche and grow it into something further. So your niche is the storyboarding, and it sounds like you're doing great from there. Have you had any?
Actually, it's not.
Oh, is it not? Go on.
I don't do storyboards. I just took the job because I wanted to break into the industry. My niche is more like character design and prop design.
Oh, right. Okay, so the bit that you were saying they do.
I mean, I can do storyboards. It's just not my niche, and I've never done, like, an extensive one. My biggest storyboard probably had, like, 100 frames, which in the big scheme of things isn't that much, because it was for, like, 1-minute video.
Wow. Okay. So you currently design the props of the characters. If people wanted to get into that, is that something that they'd have to follow the same sort of route as you? Just find any way into the industry, or do they? Can they start at props and character design? Is it something? What sort of route in do you think people need to take?
Right. So I mean, it's not impossible to break into as a character designer, but it's pretty hard, and most people actually start through like background or props or even wardrobe or layout or something else, and then they get a character design job. That's what I've heard from people from the industry. So like, it's not impossible, but you might have better luck starting that prop design.
Okay, so just to articulate that, from so say it was me and I wanted to go and do that, do I go in there and say, right, I've got this, you know, I'm your storyboard person because that's the job you gave me on the way in, or I'm your prop person, or I'm your, or whatever it is, your makeup person, and then just keep telling them that I can do the props, I can do the character design, or by the way, it's a skill I have, and hope that one day they remember? Or is it a bit different from that? Or is it a matter of them saying, we need a character designer?
I mean, networking is definitely important, because it might land you a job later on if you, you know, you met a recruiter somewhere and they remember you when they have to hire someone, or they can just like bump up your application in the process. Sorry, I forgot the question.
Yeah, no, it was a long question, but I'm just thinking, for people that are thinking, wow, no, character design is something I'm really interested in, but like you, maybe they've applied for a few and they've kind of been knocked back because they didn't have different experiences in storyboarding and so forth.
Oh yeah, you're gonna get so many rejections, and in most cases, they won't like actually send you a rejection email. You just won't hear from them. I've gotten a few rejection emails from Disney and Netflix, which is honestly quite great to know that, you know, at least they actually told me no instead of ignoring my request. Though, please don't go and send hate to recruiters if they don't answer you. They probably get like hundreds and hundreds of applications per day. So it's understandable that they won't be able to answer to every single application.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a very common thing in a lot of industries. I think anyone applying for work at the moment is probably aware that they've fired off 1,000 and maybe heard back 3 or 4 times. It's just a big fight for places, isn't it? But do you feel like then, as well as it being hard to kind of get in that initial interview or get picked for a job, have you had any other kind of barriers that you feel like you've had to have overcome? Mainly from an autism perspective, but obviously if there's anything else that you can advise people on, that's useful as well.
Well, as far as to barriers, anxiety has for sure been a challenge for me since I have memory, right? So I did get diagnosed at 19, but I pretty much always had anxiety. It affects pretty much all of my interactions, and it's really hard to shake sometimes. Imposter syndrome is also quite a frequent one. But it's also comforting knowing that it's a universal artistic experience to have imposter syndrome. I know some artists I really admire that are quite big that also have imposter syndrome. So it's like, I'm pretty sure everyone has it at some point.
I think I'm sure I've probably said this in your presence before, but I saw a great quote online once where Neil Gaiman said he was at a special event for people called Neil. And someone leant into him and said, I feel like an imposter. And he said, well, all I do is write books that people read. And this guy said, I only go where people send me. And Neil Gaiman said to him, but you did land on the moon, Neil. And it was Neil Armstrong that he was talking to. And he was standing there like an imposter. And reading that made me think, there is literally nobody in the world who doesn't feel like an imposter. The man who landed on the moon first feels like an imposter, you know. And I butchered his statement a little bit there because I'm trying to do it on the fly. But if he can feel like an imposter, then I think we're all right. I think we're allowed to. But I've seen your art. Your art's outstanding. And, you know, I think we're lucky that we know a lot of really good artists. And, you know, it's, you can tell when someone's got that sort of spark in their art that's going to take them a long way. But you feel like, so beyond anxiety, have they been accommodating in the jobs? I mean, I know you said you're working from home because of the pandemic. Has there been any kind of needs you've had to ask them to accommodate that they've said yes or no to? But obviously,
well, I have the privilege to be able to work remotely from my house, which is quite nice since my bedroom is my safe zone and I'm able to interact with my coworkers through chat or call without having to worry about social cues, eye contact, and stuff like that. And if I need something or someone needs something from me, there's no issue with me being direct and straight to the point instead of having to navigate my way through small talk first.
Excellent. That sounds very positive then. So they're understanding, you've had that conversation with them. They know what they're expecting and how to communicate with you. That helps a lot because a lot of people don't feel like they can talk to their colleagues about this sort of thing.
Right. So the business, like the studio itself, is pretty big. But the art department, we're like 5 people, and I'm pretty sure 3 of us are neurodivergent in some way. So it's a nice thing knowing that you're probably not alone there.
Cool. Okay, that brings me on nicely to a question I ask. I think we've covered the challenges of what autism brings to the role in terms of anxiety, but are there any advantages that being autistic has kind of helped you in the role? And I guess having other neurodivergent people on your team is obviously going to be a big difference maker there because you understand each other and can vibe a bit on that. But are there any other advantages you think that being autistic has brought to the job?
Advantage that I see honestly as one of life and not just specifically about my work life is how I'm able to think outside the box, right? This also happened a lot in school, like in high school and college, where someone would give me a task. And it actually happened last night when I was doing homework. I was doing some typography homework and I was given this requirement, like these like requirements that I had to fulfill and conditions. So like I couldn't do this, I couldn't do that. And I had very tough limitations in what I could do about the size and typography I could use, but there was no mention of opacity, right? So I kind of loopholed my way into getting more creative outcomes for my design. So that also happens a lot in my job.
That's wonderful though, because that's what you want.
Right. Another thing though, I guess it's more of a disadvantage, is that I take things very literally. So sometimes I end up misunderstanding the task and sometimes thinking outside the box doesn't really help because the client wants something very specific. But yeah, it's a bit of both.
Does that kind of, do your team understand that might happen though and they're a bit more accommodating? They'll say to you, you know, this wasn't what we wanted, but it's okay. Or how do they manage that? How do you manage that?
Oh yeah, for sure. There is a lot of communication.
Cool. Okay, that sounds good.
It's also okay if you mess up. Like, obviously you have to fix it, right? But they know you're not trying to mess something up on purpose. So, or if I'm not able to meet a deadline, they're like, okay, just let us know in advance so we can manage it and be able to work things out, right?
Yeah, that sounds positive.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you've ever had any kind of problems, you know, barriers, discrimination, anything like that in the workplace because of being autistic? Do you think that anyone has treated you differently as a result of it, or has it been okay so far?
Well, I mean, not quite. Once a month we do have, like, I haven't perceived at least any sort of discrimination against me. But once a month, we do have an in-person work day and a few in-person events throughout the year, you know, like Christmas, New Year and stuff. And not only does it make me anxious, but I end up masking a lot for hours, which is extremely exhausting to me. And sometimes I fear people notice, since I can be quite expressive with my face, and my neutral face is pretty serious. You know, like resting bitch face.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm scared people notice that.
It sounds exactly the same as the sort of thing I experience when I go to work events and I tend to avoid them. And it's a similar, I guess, probably for the same reason. You worry about how you look. You worry about how you will behave in terms of getting tired or worried or anxious. And then it's also the before and after, the anxiety before, the tiredness after. I have had conversations at work where I've said, can I limit this? Can I avoid this? You know, it's a big task on me, but I feel like a lot of workplaces could do with considering the fact that not everyone likes a big party. And so how do you just talk to work about that?
Oh yeah, definitely. And don't get me started about the music noises and how crowded those events are. It's definitely like overstimulating. It's really like sensory overloading. I don't know how else to explain it.
Yeah, I think I look back on a lot of years of work parties and events and realize that some of the things that happened there that they maybe put down to alcohol or festivities were actually overloading and wanting to kind of sit aside and, you know, so on and so forth. So it is a minefield. But again, I feel like these days, especially in the UK, there's a lot of things we can do. We can talk to occupational therapists about that. We can get advice on that sort of thing. We can say, like, can we avoid this stuff? And you can get a lot of things signed off, this agreements in advance. And I mean, do you have access to that kind of thing over there where you can have it written into your contract or anything like that? Is that something that, I don't know if that's a universal thing, so I'm just thinking of all the listeners who aren't in the UK, whether there are options for you to negotiate that into a contract or have that written by HR. Do you have that kind of access, do you think?
I mean, I personally just signed an NDA contract, so it's more about confidential content. Everything else you just talk it out, at least in my workplace.
That's cool, that works.
So, and everyone is pretty chill about that, so
yeah, that sounds great. That's good enough, it's better.
So like the in-person work days aren't really mandatory. Like, you do have to work, but you can work remotely anyway.
No, cool. Okay. So bringing on to our last sort of section on this, do you have any advice for autistics who are looking for a career like yours? I know we touched on a couple of bits, but yeah, if someone's young or well, any age really, and is thinking that sounds perfect, I would like to go and pursue that, what could they do to start?
That's a really good question. Well, art is so subjective and based on perception, right? So the best way to work in the art field is to put all of your energy in telling stories.
Telling stories your way, from your point of view, right? Each of us has something to show the world, even if it's not a fleshed out story and just a silly doodle, it's still a way to express yourself through art. And no one can take that away from you.
Sounds great advice. Very good. I like that a lot. So with that, I think our last thing was about employers and workplaces. I think we've kind of covered that. Is there anything else you'd like to suggest to any workplaces listening, what they could do to accommodate autistic employees?
Okay, so this is going to be more based on my experience in the workplace, right?
Yeah, that's perfect.
But be understanding, I'd say, be understanding with your employees and have their sensory needs in mind. Like, implement break rooms for people to go to if the main workplace gets loud, you know, if it's not remote. And also, be extremely direct about what you want from them. So, like, remember, we take things literally. And if you say you want something done whenever I have time, I will do that whenever I have time. Even if internally you were intending for me to do it, like, right now, you know? Because I've heard that happens so much, where you say, okay, just do it later. And later could mean in 2 days for the autistic person, when the boss actually meant, like, in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that problem. The amount of times someone has said to me, when you've got a free afternoon, and then 12 days later, they're saying, where is it? And I'm like, well, I didn't have a free afternoon. You know, my job's pretty full on. So I understand that fully. It's a lot of that just comes from not understanding the what they're saying has right. meaning. And yeah, that's good advice for sure.
Yeah, the subtext.
And it horrifies me thinking that I've gone over 30 years not realizing I was missing that, I guess.
No, it's nightmare fuel for sure.
Sure. So yeah, your insights have been great on this. I really appreciate you coming on and telling us all about the industry you work in and you know, giving us ideas of how people can get into it and whatnot. Is there anything that you are currently working on that you'd like people to check out? Anywhere that people could go to see more of your work?
Ooh, well, it's too early to announce anything yet, but I'm currently working on a personal project called Star Weaver. So feel free to follow me on Tiz Mooney on Instagram and Twitter for future posts about that.
Excellent. Well, I'm personally very excited to see that as well. And I really recommend people do check you out because your art is fantastic, like genuinely great. So yeah, thank you very much. And is there anything else you'd like to add at all before we finish up?
I just wanted to thank you for the platform, honestly.
Yeah, no, awesome. Thank you. So yeah, thank you very much for listening.
And check out Sensory.
Oh yeah, check out Sensory. God, so Mooney and a lot of the people that are going to be involved on the podcast took part in writing a book last year. It's an anthology book about being autistic adults. There's loads of different stories in there. When I first bought it, I read it. When I got in, I read it in like 2 hours straight. And then I read it again. And then I was just shaking and excitedly waffling on about it to my wife and telling everyone I knew to buy it. And they all just looked at me like I was mad because why was I getting so hyped? But it's because I was reading a book about people like me that I actually understood.
Everyone is a little mad sometimes. It's fine. Yeah.
But I just felt like I described it to someone as like giving a dog who's only ever lived with cats a book about dogs and having them realize that there are other people like there are dogs like them and they're not a cat, and that I never knew that. Right. I never knew there were people like me. You know, I've always been told I'm a bit different and weird, and then realizing actually everyone in the book is like me and we're not weird was lovely. So absolutely check out Sensory. It's available in all good bookshops. It's on Amazon. It's on everywhere. Mooney will have tweeted about it, I'm sure. When you go and follow Mooney on Tiz Mooney on Twitter and so forth, there will be tweets about Sensory on there. It is a fantastic book and I highly recommend it. But yeah, thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. We'll be doing, as I mentioned before, episodes are coming out on Wednesdays and Saturdays. So if it's a Wednesday or a Saturday, the next episode's out. Check it out on there. I need to work out an order on these. I'll be doing tweets. I'm at RB6K on Twitter, and I'll be tweeting about the schedule of what days are out when and so on and so forth. But we're on every platform. You'll have heard us on one. That's why you're listening. And yeah, thank you very much for your time. We'll see you on the next episode. Thank you.
Thank you.